you're like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch was probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Great Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Witch Police Radio. Witch Police Radio.
Hey gang, you know how this works. This is my third of four episodes counting down my top 20 releases, top 20 local releases of 2024. So if this is your first time listening to Witch Police Radio, I would encourage you to pick maybe a more standard episode where it's an interview with a local artist, or at least go back to the first in this installment of top 20 releases of 2024. For this one, same deal as always, I'm going to play a clip of an interview with the artist, if I have one. And then I'll play a clip from the album that we're talking about. So it just gives you a little bit of extra content. Usually the people on these lists are people I have interviewed, sometimes not necessarily in the same calendar year, but I've done recent interviews with. So there's a clip of an interview and a song, and then you can hear what my choices are. So starting at number 10, we're going to go with the album Paul is Dead by Paul Hodgert. And Paul has been on the podcast before. He was on the podcast this year, but at the time, I had never met him, I'd never spoken to him. I wasn't on that episode. It was a guest host, and that guest host was Greg Soden, who is best known as the host of Unscripted Moments, a podcast about propaganda. And Paul Hodgert, the artist who released this album, is very involved in the community surrounding that propaganda podcast. And through that community, I got to know him a bit better. I got more interested in sort of digging deeper into his album, and it's something that really grew on me. After the first couple listens, I liked it. Couple more listens, I liked it a lot more, and then and so on. It just seemed to keep getting better and better, and I seemed to keep appreciating some aspect of the song, of the songs, differently every time I heard it. So it's a really cool record. It's very emotional. You could definitely call it a punk album, I think. Some people would probably call it an emo album. There's a lot of genres you could throw around, but Paul Hodgert, Paul is Dead.
In the back of my head all the time, and I have some people who I know would just jump in at a moment's notice if I ask them to. The main issue is when you go through the record, it's not the most complex arrangements, but the vocal arrangements on at least one song are really complex, and getting enough people to actually do that properly. I think I'd need like 8 people just singing for one of the songs, and that could be a bit tough. But again, it's always in the back of my head. So if anybody hears this and really wants to play this record, reach out. We'll maybe make something happen.
All right, let's talk about the record. So, Paul, you have a new record called
Yes.
Paul is Dead. Tell me about the origin and the process of this record. So first of all, tell me about like when you really started to realize that something was starting to come together.
All right, well, this goes quite a bit ways back. So I said I took some time off from sort of playing seriously. And that doesn't mean I wasn't like, demoing little stuff. But in there, I had a kid. And then after I had a kid, my wife got really sick and was in the hospital for 5 weeks when we had a 2-month-old baby. Mm. So we weren't even in our house yet. Like, I'm in my house right now, but we were in an apartment in South Osborne. And I was there by myself with a brand new baby for 5 weeks. And that was, and we weren't sure if she was going to make it. That was a real terrifying time. And then after she recovered and we moved into our house, I got really sick. I got, bit by a mosquito that was carrying a form of encephalitis.
Mm.
So I had an infection in my brain. I ended up like quitting my job. I don't remember doing it. I don't remember about a year of my life in there. And that's sort of, like I said, it's sort of messing with my memory now, as I've got all kinds of weird things sort of connecting and disconnecting and reconnecting in weird ways in my brain. So I always had these ideas, and it's a really an incredibly traumatic experience to sort of like be living in hallucinations for year for like a year straight and not knowing quite what was going on. And eventually like, I recovered from that, and I had all these ideas and all of this, like, for lack of a better term, trauma from these incredibly jarring experiences that I felt like I needed to find a way to express all of these thoughts and things. So a couple of years ago, I was thinking, you know, I'm turning 40 in 2024. I'd love to do I've never done a solo album. I've only ever done stuff with bands. I'd love to do a solo album about this stuff, really express all these sort of feelings and experiences mixed with like around the same time, I also got a diagnosis for persistent depressive disorder. So like sort of expressing all of these things from that have been going on in my life. And I figured, you know what, let's put it out on my 40th birthday. So on July 9th, I did it. And I made a point of telling people in public years out from this that I was going to do it, because if I didn't tell people, I totally was going to drop it and not do it, because I was just going to put it off and put it off and then say, oh, it wasn't that big of a deal. But I made a point. I'm telling people, and somehow, I don't know how, I managed to actually get it done. So the process was like, it's 10 years of demos of ideas and things and like snippets of lyrics written here and there that I sort of pieced together in the studio, which is a weird sentence because I'm in the studio right now. It's my basement. I sort of pieced together here and managed to put together into like a full length record somehow.
Man, that's awesome. And it's so good too.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I love it. It took me a while to kind of like, I don't listen to a ton of music, which is kind of like people find that strange whenever I say that a guy who hosts a podcast about music doesn't really listen to a lot of music, but it's just kind of where I am in my life right now. So it took me a while, but then once I started listening to it, I just kept listening to it repeatedly. And I was like, man, this is so great. So I'm really just like pleased for you and proud of you for like setting that hard deadline and ensuring against all odds, no matter what, that it happened. You manifested it. You willed it into existence.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me, we got a variety of instrumentation on the record. We got some full band stuff that sounds like it could be like on an Epitaph album. We've got some stuff that sounds like it could be on like a Polyvinyl album or a Saddle Creek album. And we have a wide range of sounds and influences that come through on the record to my ears. So what and who are we hearing on the record with regards to like the minimized songs and then like the full band sounding songs?
Well, that's really interesting because when I was uploading it, you have to put into like all the streaming services, you have to put in genres. And I'm like, oh, it's a punk record. And then after I put it up there, I was like, wait a minute, is this a punk record? I'm not entirely sure. Like it's all over the spectrum of various things that kind of fall under punk. Like there's some melodic skate punk type parts. There's some Midwest emo-y parts. There's some power poppy stuff. Like it's kind of all over the place. And it's just, you're sort of hearing all of the influences and all the things that mean a lot to me, or like all the bands that have meant a lot to me throughout my life. I'm actually surprised there's only one fast song on it. I originally had another one that just wasn't coming together, so I cut it. And I'm sure it'll pop up some other time, but like that was kind of a shock because I really like fast stuff. Like that's kind of my thing.
Guilty.
And I'm also surprised that none of it sounds like Jawbreaker or Husker Du, which are two huge influences on me in general. And I'm surprised that none of it actually sounds like that. My pop punk band had a real Jawbreaker Alkaline Trio-y vibe, but this stuff does not really have any of that. So yeah, just listening to a lot of American Football, some Title Fight, some Hum.
Yeah,
stuff Hum, like that.
Oh, I that came through big time for me. I was like, oh, because I love Hum a lot, and you know, their Astronaut record from like the 90s was something that just was definitive for me. It's one of those definitive 90s records that no matter what, it will always be with me in my heart. Like it's like woven throughout me. It's one of those records. I was like, oh man, they got some Hum on this Paul record. I'm loving it. So that shone through for me big time. Forget all that you've heard, because you heard I'm dying, it's coming through.
Next up is Saints Go to Church, Sinners Go to Jail. Nope, that's not what it's called. Next up is Sinners Go to Church, Saints Go to Jail by Greg Rikus. If you've been around the local music scene or you've listened to this podcast or anything like that for the past number of years, you're probably familiar with Greg Rikus. He's been touring the world kind of nonstop as a folk punk solo artist for decades now. And he's a frequent guest on this show because he always has something interesting to say about the whole nature of being a DIY touring artist. So it's always, I'm always happy to get him on. Whenever he puts out a record, I try to get him on if I can. If I can catch him, you know, between globetrotting missions. But yeah, Greg has a new record out. It's again with the Inside Job with his band that has been on the past two or three. It's got a heavy amount of saxophone, courtesy of Daryl Riley, who's also been on the show a few times over the years and has been involved in many, many great local projects. Yeah, we talked a lot about the sort of DIY aspect of what he does and the being a very, very fiercely independent artist in a world that isn't necessarily all that positive towards people like that. And yeah, it was a great interview. It's a great record. Sort of continuing the last three with The Inside Job. It's definitely a cool way to experience Greg if you're used to hearing him just as a solo guy. Having the band behind him gives it the songs a bit of extra punch, a bit of that extra punk rock thing. And yeah, so here's a clip from my conversation with Greg and a song from the album.
I did get in a January tour that was moderately successful. And then I was right in the middle of, like, 2 weeks into a 3 month tour with my friend Tim Holhouse.
Right.
He booked this just amazing European tour. My partner Katie was going to come along. She was going to kind of be a tour mate. She had been to Europe before, but I don't think she had traveled it extensively. So the tour was like, it was just this big giant thing that was going to happen. And then I know I'm not the only one that got rear ended by the pandemic. So many people did. And, you know, luckily it never affected me really that negatively health-wise, so I'm definitely not trying to say anything like that, but still really hard. I really suffered. And then when we last talked 2022, like, as much as I was like masking up for a lot of the shows on that tour, we were like testing before every show, doing like the nose swab. Nothing really went wrong. I felt like I had a cold the entire tour, never once tested positive for COVID. But it still wasn't very much, like, it was still very apparent that, like, this isn't back to normal yet.
Yeah, yeah.
As much as we did get to do the shows, as much as, like, nothing was derailed with us having to cancel a week or two to shelter in place because we got sick, the last year, 2024, has been like, wow, like, it feels like it used to be in a lot of ways, and, you know, feel really, really lucky for that.
Yeah.
And this year I've already done, I think I'm almost over 100 shows. I was out again with my friend Tim. We went out end of December, most of January, and then March, April, May, I was out in the U.S. and then back to Europe. And it's been amazing. The new record, I feel like, has, I mean, I say this every time, you could probably like,
I make a compilation like of the clips. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Every single, like, oh, the new record's the best. But honestly, I think it's so good. The lineup has changed up a little bit. And we really, really clicked on this one. Shay is on drums. He was in the Knuckle Draggers, a couple other Winnipeg bands. He was in Sugar Sick. Blue from Grotoco started playing bass, singing backup, and just instrumentation kind of stuff.
Cool.
And then, of course, Daryl is still back on sax. And, I also feel like I did a great job of writing the songs, but that's only part of it. No matter how good I do with here's like a couple ideas, it's still kind of up for everybody to do their part.
Yeah.
And when it comes to everybody's part, like, I try to be, I mean, if I really don't like it, I'm not going to be shy, but it's very much like, what do you think? What are you hearing kind of for the drums? I mean, if I'm thinking kind of like a, and then Shay's kind of like,
yeah.
Like, maybe in that case, like, oh, I was thinking something faster. But everybody kind of brought these amazing ideas, and I'm really, really, really happy how it turned out.
It's awesome.
It's one of those records, like, I wouldn't say I listen to it as in, like, I'll put it on and just, like, you know, stand back and you know, kind of, ooh, I'm so awesome. It's not like that. It's just something objectively, even if I could, like, tear my ears off my head and put it on someone else's head, that person would be like, yes, this is a good record.
That's awesome. That's a good way to look at it, I think. That you want to release something that you actually really, not just like, that you love, right? You want to put something out that you feel passionate about enough about that other people will hopefully feel the same way.
Yeah. And the process, too, I feel I've kind of somewhat cracked it. Like, we did this for the Punkoustic album, kind of. We had, I'm sure, again, I told the story years ago.
Well, that was a decade ago, too, right? So, I mean, it's been a while since that came out, yeah.
Yeah, which that album I absolutely love too, and we rehearsed that one a lot, but not with the drummer. That was just me and the bass player. Mike Yerg was supposed to drum on that album. He didn't get into the country, got stopped at the border and sent back, so we scrambled, and in the end it really worked out. But with the last three records, we've gotten together a week before and jammed like 8 hours a day.
Nice.
Like, nope, start picking up people like 9 a.m., get something to eat, get some coffees, start jamming. We'll have like a long lunch where we go have some good food, back to the space, we'll go to like 6, or I think one night we even went kind of later ish and just so these songs are all we like live, eat, sleep. And then when it gets to the studio, you know, as much as maybe you're kind of tired and maybe you're even kind of sick of these songs, you know them. Is no, like when they hit that record button, there's no humming and hawing or thinking what's going to happen next. Like, you were, it is automatic, and not in a robotic way, in a like, wow, I can't believe how well I'm playing these songs kind of way. So that was kind of the formula we used for this. And I think we knocked out the bed tracks in about 3 days. And that includes all the setup, getting sounds and everything.
Yeah.
And from there, we had all that time to do the sax overdubs. We might have done one of the sax tracks live too, I think, but I think most of it was overdubbed.
What if I told you, let's work together, let's feed the poor, let's fix the weather, start looking past the complications, put in between all our relations, but human nature, it overwhelms and keeps us fighting amongst ourselves, all the strings. They still control us, just like the cops who still patrol us. Democracy, but it's a better way. Voting really matter than they wouldn't let us play. We get my better judgment, I betray. Participate, watch it decay. Are you gonna lead us? Are you gonna rule us? Are you gonna rule us? Are you gonna lead us? Are you gonna lead us? Are you gonna rule us? Are you gonna rule us? Are you gonna lead us? Hey! Is it a problem? With our generation, is it our lack of participation? It's hard to care when nothing changes, no matter how we mock the pages. The spirit of the 60s never died. Did it make some money? Ain't been comfy to comply. Is there any point in we even trying when everything feels like a lie? Are you gonna rule us? Are you gonna lead us? Are you gonna lead us? Are you gonna rule us? Are you gonna rule us? Are you gonna lead us? Are you gonna lead us? Are you gonna rule us? Are you gonna lead us? Are you gonna rule us? Are you gonna rule us? Are you gonna lead us? Are you gonna lead us? To trace the outline as he slowly fades away, turns his head to see what's left to show.
The strangers that he'd recognize outweigh the friends he knows. Shoot all the messengers with their innocence of fault. Bearer of bad news is always first against the wall. Tell the king to keep his breach, there's demons closing in. To watch him squirm and churn and weep, regretting every sin. Well, this life is a nightmare. He stumbles out withdrawing from the crowd. Ripping, grasping, clawing at the walls to hold him up. The stare is black and vile to the sky. Believe in those who seek the truth, but finding it's a lie. Throw the captain overboard, this vessel now be mine. Fly the flag of wickedness, so black and honor rise. Stain the seas on red with blood, no innocent survive. A relic of forgotten pain is all that burns inside. This life is a nightmare, life is a nightmare, life is a nightmare. Well, if our struggle is depression, lonesome methods on our tail. What's done is done, if we're the cause, then save us from ourselves. I'm just selfish and divided, I'm just ignorant and cruel. But you only get to win the game by breaking every rule. So let's burn the bridge, let's lock the door, let's throw in the key. You won't need friends where we are going, all you need is me. Light will isolate and burn me in. Reasons of our minds, as if you make it that the gates you brought to burn the world. We go further and further and further and further down. Further and further and further and further down. We go further and further and further and further down. Further and further and further and further down. We go further, 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 further down. Further, 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 further down. We go further, 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 further down. Further, further, further,
Next up is Winter of Wiggle by Stiff Wiggle. And actually, this is a weird one because there's two records or two EPs here. It's called Summer of Stiff and Winter of Wiggle. And as far as Bandcamp tells me anyway, Summer of Stiff actually came out in 2023, which would make it kind of not qualify for this this list. But I got a copy, I think it was a one-of-one copy on cassette from Stiff Wiggle himself that included both parts. Included Summer of Stiff and Winter of Wiggle. So I kind of have listened to them throughout the year as sort of a single project. I know they're on different sides of the tape, but it doesn't matter. Like, I've been consuming this whole thing as one totality of Stiff Wiggleness. So, it's really cool. I knew, obviously, having known him for a number of years and heard many of his projects over the years, that it was going to be good. That wasn't really in question, but I'm never sure what to think about electronic music. Some of it I really like, some of it I don't get. And the synthesizer thing, Stiff Wiggle is very heavily involved in that part of the music scene. And that's always been a mystery to me, no matter how many times people try to explain it. So I wasn't sure what to expect, but I was not expecting the songs to be this catchy. I think, you know, his background writing in poppier bands in more sort of vocal-driven, instrument-driven bands in the past really shines through here. There's just huge hooks on a lot of these songs. They're earworms. And yeah, it's just really cool. It's really cool to see there was a bunch of Stiff Wiggle shows, I think, for the first time ever, either last year or this year. And it's just it's really cool to see him getting out there and getting the attention. That a really cool, really cool project that a lot of effort was put into is getting. So I didn't actually talk to Stiff Wiggle this year on the podcast. Talked to him in real life, of course, but the last time I think was 2023, and that interview is still very valid because the conversation about synthesizers and about, you know, sort of teaching yourself this whole new world of sound is still relevant no matter what year you hear it. So I'm going to include a clip from that conversation and then a song from Winter of Wiggle.
As I sort of alluded to earlier, I've just sort of been picking up new instrumental, you know, sort of skills. I have been making music for my entire life, but it has been in an intuitive way. I was, you know, a band student, but when I was in band, I was, you know, forced to learn things on my own. I was moved around from instrument to instrument from year to year. I played tuba one year and piccolo the next year. So there was a really wide variety of musical experiences there, and I became a really solid generalist. I really learned how to play by ear. I really learned how to figure things out on my own. And, you know, there are pros and cons to doing that, but that's who I am as an artist.
Sure.
And so when I started to have that creative urge, when high school band ended, when university began, and I around that time was when I started to express myself by a music I was creating. And I was doing that all on my computer using a software that was called Fruity Loops, or FL Studio as it's still known. I still use it today. It's one of the most popular, you know,
yeah,
solutions for making computer music in the world. And so it's but it was a it was art that I created with a sort of a blank canvas approach. I never really had anything I wanted to say. I knew what I didn't want to do with the art. I didn't want to rock anyone. You know, I didn't want to have. I wanted to make music that was, you know, beautiful and easy to appreciate, but it didn't, you know, but I didn't want to upset anyone. You know, that wasn't, or I didn't want to risk. I wanted everyone to like, you know,
yeah,
because yeah, that's kind of who I am by default. If I don't, you know, try to counteract that tendency, which I'm working on. So the music I made was, you know, it was hard to characterize, but really easy to enjoy. It was like a down tempo, chill out, groovy, you know,
yeah,
kind of music. I tried to, like, it was inspired by edgier music like Radiohead and Bjork and stuff like that, Pink Floyd, a little bit, but it with all the edges sanded off. So it was all just sort of trippy and smooth and yeah, I mean that was great. It met with some success with the local campus radio community and
yeah,
tiny clusters of folks on the internet, but connecting in a meaningful way with locals, like actual human beings to speak to about the art I was doing, was very hard. So it was a very lonely process, and I got, you know, most of the value from it as, you know, a learning experience. And now I happen to know how to produce albums with some degree of proficiency, and, you know, I know the whole process, you know.
Yeah.
There were some band alliances as well. I was in a conventional rock group with my twin brother Tim and a childhood friend James McLean, and we were called the Eardrums. We had a lot of fun with that. And I, because I knew how to make records at that period of time, we and because I knew how to play various instruments, like one of the fun things with the Eardrums was we switched instruments.
Yeah, that's a cool little trick that you guys had there. Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah. So over the course of, you know, a live show, I would play guitar and drums and bass and keyboards, and, you know, I also produce all the music, and, you know, and so I wore every possible hat, and you know, I even kind of faked mastering it, right? Because that's what you do when you can't afford, you know, when
yeah,
you don't want to pay Jamie to do it or whatever.
To do it properly, yeah, yeah, yeah.
To do it properly, yeah, because yeah, because you just can't, because it's not a priority. Because you don't have a full time job. So or the support, you know, around you to do anything but DIY. So it was, and DIY has always been a very important part of what I do. I haven't ever set foot in a proper recording studio or anything like that. So nor have I ever collaborated with people who are established in the music scene. So there's
yeah,
been a bit of an alienation sort of up till now, and that has kind of characterized the music that I've made. So there are other musical projects along the way. Those are the big sort of, you know, touchstones, and that sort of sets the scenes for the new stuff. I in the last 5 years, I've been collecting hardware synthesizers instead of software ones.
Yeah.
And
we went into great detail on that last time, to the point where you were even showing me kind of on air how it worked, which was fascinating. And I mean,
yeah,
I would highly recommend that people check that out, that episode out. I'm going to link to it in the show notes, because there's so much that we went into there that I think that it would be like kind of, yeah, you know, doing a disservice to the current stuff we're talking about to go over it all again. But it really is worth a listen for sure.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I was, you know, it was very wide ranging. And I tried to keep it focused, tailored towards people who are curious about these bloody things but have no understanding, because they, considering how much music is woven into the fabric of our lives and how acquainted the average person is with a guitar and a piano because of tradition and all of that, you know, synthesizers are still sort of mysterious to a lot of people.
They are,
and they're on every song. and most of the times we aren't even thinking about that. It's fascinating. It's wild. And so my engagement with synthesizers was not really in an artistic capacity. It was in a hobbyist capacity of the last 5 years. You know, it kept me sane. It gave me something to pour thousands and thousands of dollars of money into.
It gave me,
you know, I met some people. I ran a local synthesizer community. We're called Voltage in Maine. I had to disband it because of personal stuff, but it was a valuable experience for a period of time. And, you know, the point I'm trying to make is all of the instruments I was collecting and all of the skills I was learning about how to use them, it wasn't being put to any end. I wasn't applying it, you know, in any meaningful way. And I guess that's kind of just the way that life goes, right? You know, I mean, you learn, it's like, you go to school and, you know, you ask yourself, why am I learning all this stuff? You know, what am I going to need this for? And then, you know, when you're 57 years old, you need to figure out, you know, how tall a tree is in your backyard, and you dig out your calculus knowledge or your trigonometry knowledge. Sorry. Yeah. And, you know, then all of a sudden you realize it's all connected and light, and, you know,
hasn't happened with me with trigonometry, and I don't think it ever will. I still barely understand what the point of a triangle is. Like, yeah, but I know what you're saying, though, for sure. So just,
it's you're still learning. You're still, you know, and
I'm never going to learn that.
She says I've got to give on 10%. I asked my pastor, and the pastor told me to repent. I'm spending every euro, every yen, and every cent. I've got no answer, so I dance around this dick man. I don't know why it is, but I have never felt like this. And if you come alive with me, then we can bounce alive in town. You're sick.
Next up is Diaphanes Solid Gold. This is an artist that I hadn't really listened to for a while. When we got in touch to do the podcast again, it seemed like a great idea to check out what she was doing, what the latest project under the Diaphany name was. And Solid Gold is awesome. I think that anyone who knows sort of the Winnipeg music scene and is familiar with Diaphany's music or the previous project Atlas, you know the vocals are good. You know that there's a really, really powerful voice there. But this record is really cool because, well, on one hand, there's a lot of local references. I like that. I'm a nerd for Winnipeg references. First song I heard off the record started talking about locations in Winnipeg that I obviously recognize. And that even if the music is bad, that is awesome for me. I really love it. So when the music is very, very good in this case, it made it even better, right? So this album is a little bit of a departure from the previous Diaphany releases in that it's much more folk-oriented. And it's really cool to have sort of this combination of really, really soulful sort of vibes permeating the whole thing, but it's not an R&B record. It's a folk record, and there's acoustic guitars, and it's you know. So I don't know what I'm talking about. It's a really good record. Her voice is ridiculous. Songs are great. Check out the EP Solid Gold.
Did they feel old to you at all now at this point? I mean, because you've spent so much time sort of leading up to this, or I mean, I know they're fresh to the listeners, which is a good place to be. But do you feel like your writing or your style has changed sort of in the time from when these were written and recorded to now?
Honestly, I'm really proud of what I did on the EP. I really like the writing, and I was really honest with myself. And I think that there's songs that, like, I think the best thing that can happen to a song is for someone to interpret it in their own way, and to take examples into their own life, and kind of figure out their own meaning. But yeah, the songs are all super meaningful to me, and I think with writing, you're always going to like your new song best. I feel that's kind of the progression of writing. So it's kind of like about letting go of the ego and more talking about like, what story do I want to tell with these songs? Because after a certain point, you write so many songs that you might have a little bit less loyalty to one or another.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, they're all great. I love them all equally. They're all my children. And it's kind of just picking the ones that is going to maybe make the best family.
It's an interesting analogy for it. So I guess, I mean, using that same family analogy, how do you choose which child to give away? Like, I mean, what makes a song, you know, like you said, you've been doing all these song week things. You have a lot of material. How do you decide which songs are the ones that you want to release, like on this EP? What makes a song of yours stand out to you enough that you think, okay, this is one that I actually want to put out there and let people hear?
Well, up to now, I've been playing them live. So just kind of feeling how it feels in the room has been really helpful to me to kind of like what feels like it's catching energy and like how people are listening and people are caring about this. So it's been great. I'll probably do something a little different the next time we release music and not play all the songs in advance. But yeah, that's been a really good like little focus group with my audiences, just kind of figuring out what people are liking. So that is helpful. And then also it's kind of like, what feels timeless to me? What can I perform? Because it is like you're singing the same song all the time, and you can get a little bit, I wouldn't say tired because I love all my work, but it's easy to kind of lose the inspiration behind it when you're just kind of no longer in the moment you were when you wrote it.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but I've been thinking about something similar to that. Whenever I see a band that's been around for a long time, they've been around 15 years, 20 years, and everyone is waiting for them to play one song that they've probably played every night of their lives for that the entire 15-year period, I often wonder the same thing. Like, does it mean anything to them anymore? Do they have any connection to where they were when they wrote it? Because, I mean, a lot of the time it's a fluke that one song or another becomes popular. And it's not really a question. It's just a thing that I've noticed when I go to shows. The anticipation in the crowd to hear this one thing that they probably played so many times that they can do it in their sleep.
Absolutely. And people can tell when you're not like in the moment with the song. No matter how big or small the crowd is, I think you can see when someone feels really connected to the music. Like, I think as an artist, a professional artist, you have to kind of find ways to make it new for yourself. and make it fun for your day. And that's like the really the only way to do it if you want to keep playing the songs that people love.
Well, I think that the distinction of being a professional artist, it is different than someone who's just doing it for fun, because they don't have the same pressures, right? They don't have the same, they can really do whatever they want, and it doesn't necessarily matter if anyone enjoys it or not. They can go as crazy far in left field as they want to with a song and totally change it. But yeah, I mean, if you're doing it with an audience that's sort of been following you and wants to hear certain things, there's expectations, right?
Yeah. Not to bring it back to Atlas.
Go for it.
But the Atlas EP, the last one, I didn't want to put Love Song, what was it? Which one? I didn't want to put Moontown on the EP, and it's like everybody's favorite song. And I was just like, I hate this song. I'm sick of it. It's boring. And then my band was like, no, you have to put this on the album, and it has to be there. And like through that process, I learned to love it again. And then it became like one of my favorite songs to play after the EP came out. And it was just like, yeah, it was cool. It was cool to see that like I have the ability to kind of like, I don't have to drop something just because I'm bored with it. That's not like really what music as a professional musician is about. It's about like serving the audience and then finding a way to thrive within that. For me, that's what it is for me.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it. I think probably a lot of people would agree with that too, for sure.
Tingles with the woodbine, dancing in a grapevine, taking boys that are not mine. Circling the goodwill, trying to find a spot that's free. I keep looking until City Hall, Central Park, solid gold. Every stop sign, trying to make the garbage hill climb. Red wine by the riverside. Cross the bridge when we get there. Maybe climb the fire escape. Anything to get away. City Hall, Central Park, solid gold. Sherbrooke, maybe hit a karaoke bar. We don't have to go too far. Don't you know this is woofer? No one ever calls a chauffeur, and it all becomes a blur. City Hall, Central Park, solid gold.
Next up is the self-titled album by Winnipeg trio Compost. And this is another one where I'm not entirely sure on the year. I got the tape in 2024. I interviewed them in 2024. I assumed the album came out in 2024. Bandcamp says it was 2023. I don't think it matters. This is the year I discovered it and talked to them and listened to it thoroughly. So it's going on my list, whatever. It's a great, great, great album. If you're not familiar, Compost is an instrumental trio that is very heavily influenced, obviously, by sort of the golden age hip-hop beats, but played, you know, of course, with live instruments and sort of that those jazzy sort of loops that were really popular, you know, in the mid-90s, as far as hip-hop's concerned. They just sort of extrapolate that
and turn it into something a little bit more with more depth and more detail and more sort of a song structure instead of just obviously just a loop. But it has that feel. It has that old jazz records sort of revived and revamped and re-explored sort of feeling. So it's really cool. I was really happy to discover this. You know, I like to listen to as many local bands as I can. The name Compost didn't tell me much. I wasn't sure if it was a punk band, if it was a metal band, if it was, you know, some indie rock thing. I had no idea. So when I listened to it, it was a pleasant surprise to hear these kind of really grimy sort of hip-hop beats, you know, on live instruments that went in all kinds of interesting jazz-like directions. So, yeah, I talked to them, had a great interview. There's a clip from our conversation and a song from the record.
To writing pieces of music, I mean, I know you've just explained sort of the process of how you put those together, but a lot of that stuff that I'm assuming you're drawing from is very much sort of one or two riffs repeated, right? And so how do you take something like that and then stretch it out to be a piece of music that stands on its own without having vocals on top, without having sort of even a lead instrument at times? Because a lot of your stuff is very rhythmic. So yeah, what is sort of the, how do you move that forward without having that lead thing on top sort of driving it?
Two things, like, at times we just don't really feel like it needs to be moved forward. Like, I think there's lots of room for music that doesn't go somewhere, that sure, like, can just stay in one place. Like, especially for listening to when you're doing other activities or something like that, and it's not like your primary focus.
Yeah,
to be listening to music. But then also, like, we're such like melodic driven people that often, like, you just start finding like there's places that you want to go with something within like the repetition.
Okay.
You know, like, things can be very repetitive, but then eventually just like feel compelled to like explore beyond that repetition.
Yeah, I feel like something that's been fun to play with lately is just this idea of patience and like kind of minimalism, and how far can you stretch an idea without creating a change.
Okay.
Kind of been this fun little exercise for us in like meditation and stuff like that. But also, I feel like the longer you keep an idea going, the less drastic your changes have to be to make an impact. So to keep a song going, if you've been repeating an idea for a while, just a simple change, like from a little change in the keyboard pattern, might feel like huge because you've just been listening to like something very similar for the past 45 seconds. So therefore, just like making tiny little notches and increments in what we're doing can take like something that doesn't seem like it's going to go a lot, go bit far places. We'll just like make a bunch of little changes and it'll feel like a whole piece, just that kind of thing.
Sure. I mean, that makes sense as well. Yeah. Do you get kind of locked into these grooves? Like, can you, when you're rehearsing, when you're improvising, can these songs stretch out considerably longer than they are in the finished product? Like, can you sit there for 15 minutes on a groove, or do you, is there sort of a natural endpoint when you're improvising?
Yeah. I mean, I think we do that a lot more on the onset of the ideas, right?
Sure.
To really solidify our parts and what we want to kind of say in them, you know what I mean? I think...
And see what else might be kind of just like hiding around the corner or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
But then, yeah, I don't know. I think we all kind of have different thresholds for like patience and things like that. But like always trying to check in like visually, like, or just stay like in touch with one another when we're playing to see like, how are you feeling about this? Like, do you want to move on? Even though it can be hard to talk when you're playing music.
Sure.
Like, just trying to feel it out. And yeah, I can't do things for 15 minutes. That's too long for me personally.
I guess some of that comes with just having played together for so long too, right? You have that kind of just automatic understanding and knowledge of how everyone else is sort of feeling about the song.
Sure. Yeah. But we're always still finding like ways we can improve that too. you find like there's some rub every once in a while where it's like, you really want to get someone's attention, but it's like hard or something like that. Yeah.
Well, how does this, a couple questions that are related here. First of all, how does this work live? As far as, you know, just doing that, just determining, you know, when a piece is going to end or where to go with it. And then I guess I'll answer that one first, and then I have a kind of a brother to that question. But yeah, like what is the process live? Is it the same as when you're rehearsing, where you just kind of launch into it and then whatever develops, develops? Or is it much more structured in that kind of setting?
I would say it'll probably be more structured. We haven't played a live show, though.
Oh, okay. So well, there you go. Yeah, okay. So this is all speculative at this point, then. Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah.
But we have been experimenting. We have been experimenting with like the idea of a structured kind of set list versus just kind of meandering our way through our tunes and like figuring out which process feels, I guess, the more natural or like is able to like serve better for what we're trying to do. So yeah, feels like it could go either way right now, or maybe it'll be a combination of both. Who's to say?
Yeah, it's kind of nice when you can transition between tunes quickly because everyone is on the same page and you know, like to have little medleys, but then also have room for us to, you know, just like end something and be like, where do you want to go next, you know, and that kind of thing.
So that's the end of this episode. I've gone from number 10 to 6. Starting on the next episode, coming in a few days, you're going to get number 5 to number 1. And then thankfully, mercifully, we will all be done with this stupid project I do every year, and you can get back to listening to regular interview podcasts.